The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, online news editor of Science, with some of the recent stories from our daily news site. So David, we have some animal stories today. First, a fish that can resist the teeth of piranhas.
Right. Sarah, this is a story about the arapaima, which is a fish that frequents the waters of the Amazon, and it's a very interesting fish. First of all, it's huge. It weighs up to 200 kilograms. It's about 2.5 meters long, and it's called a living fossil because it actually still has lungs, and it needs to come to the surface to breathe air. But what's most fascinating about this fish is that it can actually withstand a piranha attack. Fishermen who try to catch this thing actually throw chunks of meat into the water to get it to come to the surface. And the piranhas make quick work of this meat, but not quick work of the arapaima. And the question is, how does this fish survive such a deadly predator? Piranha's teeth are about as sharp as carving knives.
So there's some observations in nature. How do they test it in the lab?
Well, what they did was they actually looked at the arapaima's scales. They figured that's where its defense was coming from. And lo and behold, it has some pretty interesting scales. Its scales are silver and black shingles, which can grow up to 10 centimeters long. And when the researchers took a closer look, the scales are actually composed of some pretty interesting stuff. On the inside, they're made from sheets of collagen, which is this tough and springy material that's found in our own joints and bones. Mm-hmm. So they kind of have this flexible material on the inside, but on the outside, they're actually made from collagen again, but the collagen is cemented together with calcium, which is a much tougher material. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of material found in our bones. So this combination of the really tough exterior helps the fish withstand the bite of the piranha, and the fact that they're flexible on the inside means that when the piranha bite them with these carving knife teeth, it doesn't shatter the scales because they've got this flexibility. So it's a really sort of nice, flexible, but tough armor that these fish have.
So what kinds of applications are people looking into for this kind of armor?
Well, researchers would obviously like to use this, Sarah, to develop lightweight body armor. You could think about armor that's sort of tough on the outside, flexible on the inside, and that would allow people to move around but still be protected from things like knives. And I'm not sure bullets, would they be protected from bullets with this stuff? But who knows? You know, scientists are always trying to find ways to take some fascinating stuff in the wild and apply it to stuff we could use every day.
Like swimsuits.
That too.
Okay. So next we have another animal story. The mystery of why zebras are striped.
Exactly. This is a mystery that actually goes back more than 120 years. Scientists have been pondering why zebras have these unusual stripe-like patterns. And there's been a few hypotheses floating around. One is that the pattern somehow confuses predators. Another one is that it helps the zebras camouflage themselves in grasslands. Another one is that the patterns are actually unique to each zebra and therefore helps the animals pick each other out in large herds. Hmm. But none of these hypotheses have actually been experimentally tested. And there's actually one other hypothesis that hasn't been tested either, and it's the idea that the patterns actually repel some pretty nasty flies out there on the African grasslands, tsetse flies and horse flies, which are pretty notorious pests in humans. They transmit illnesses like sleeping sickness and Chagas disease. So these are pretty nasty things, and the idea would be, well, maybe there's something about the zebra's pattern that repels these insects. But again, that is something that hadn't been experimentally tested either.
All right, I'm going to ask it. How did they test what flies like about stripes or don't like about stripes?
Well, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, they actually didn't test this on real zebras. They actually made some zebra models. And you can actually take a look at these guys on the site. What they did was they created these fake horses that had a variety of coat patterns. Some had dark colored, some had plain white coats, and others had striped coats, kind of like you'd see on a typical zebra, and actually coated these models with glue to trap any insect that would alight on them. And again, they were looking specifically at horse flies and tsetse flies. What they found was that the flies seemed to prefer the solid patterns. They seemed to prefer the solid white, solid brown patterns, and they were not as crazy about the more zebra-like patterns.
And why do the researchers think that they had a preference?
Well, they knew going in that horseflies seem to prefer darker solid patterns because they reflect a type of light called polarized light, which is basically all the light waves are oriented in the same direction. And the reason they think the flies prefer this pattern is because water also reflects this kind of pattern. Yeah. And these flies want to gravitate to water because that's where they lay their eggs. It was also known that the pure white pattern doesn't reflect this type of polarized light. So it was interesting that the flies in the experiment still preferred the pure white pattern over the zebra pattern. And the reason they think is because the zebra pattern is even more of a disrupted pattern. Mm-hmm. It's even more sort of foreign to these flies, even more far away than the kind of pattern that would be reflected from a pool of water. So if the flies have to choose between a solid pattern and a striped pattern, they're always going to go for the solid pattern, at least according to this study.
Really interesting.
Really interesting.
Well, next up, we have a fascinating study about deep brain stimulation. My first question, where do you find volunteers for this?
Well, maybe your first question, Sarah, should be, what is deep brain stimulation? And actually, it's kind of what it sounds like. It's actually stimulating the brain with bursts of electricity. Now, it actually doesn't sound like a lot of fun, but researchers have actually done this in rats for a few years, and they found that by stimulating the brain with little electric shocks, they can improve memory, they can sort of improve other brain processes. And the question is, does the same thing happen in humans? And to get to your first question, why would people want their brains zapped with electricity, or even how would you do this? The researchers in the study actually took advantage of some patients in the hospital. They actually already had wires going into their brain to help mitigate their seizures. So they were already part of a study to look for ways to use electricity or zaps to the brain to help control seizures. And the researchers said, well, let's piggyback on this and let's see, now that these patients are already wired up, can we use deep brain stimulation to improve memory?
And what kinds of memories were they looking to improve?
Well, they had the volunteers play this video game where they were pretending to be a taxi cab driver, and they drove all around this virtual city using this joystick, and they had to pick up passengers and drop them off at various locations. And part of the challenge of the game was remembering the routes and the quickest way from point A to point B. And what the researchers did with some of the patients is when they figured out a good route or a very quick route, they would zap their brain with electricity, and they wanted to see the next time they had to drive some between place A and place B, would they remember that route quicker if their brains had been zapped?
Well, so they directed this zapping at different parts of the brain. It wasn't just one specific part?
Exactly. They focused on a couple of places in the brain. One was called the entorhinal cortex, which is a part of the brain's memory circuitry. And another one was the hippocampus, which has been found to be crucial for memory. So both of these things should enhance memory if zapped, at least you would think. But what the researchers found was that indeed when they zapped the entorhinal cortex, the volunteers actually remembered their routes a lot better the second time around. So if they found a good route in this virtual city and their brains were zapped in the entorhinal cortex, they were much quicker, much more quick to run that route a second time. But when they were zapped in the hippocampus, the same thing didn't happen. They didn't really show a lot of improvement in finding these quick routes through the city.
Well, this sounds like a pretty serious procedure, but it might have applications for Alzheimer's?
Exactly. I mean, this isn't the kind of thing that you'd want to sign up for tomorrow to improve your memory. First of all, it's a very preliminary study. But what researchers are saying is, memory aside, there has been some hints that deep brain stimulation can improve things like symptoms of Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease, or even possibly treat depression and other psychiatric disorders. So this new study lends credence to the fact that, as strange as it may seem, zapping the brain with electricity may have a lot of positive benefits.
It'll be really interesting to see how that turns out. So we have some exciting travel plans coming up. We're both going to AAAS. What are you going to be doing while we're out there?
Right, Sarah. Well, we're both going to be in Vancouver, and our daily news team is going to be covering a lot of the breaking news that's happening at the AAAS meeting. There's really exciting sessions happening every day, so be sure to check out the website for the latest and the greatest. We'll also be running a few science live chats from the meeting. We've got a chat on dying languages, a chat on alien life at the bottom of the sea, and also a chat about the future of the world's oceans. So be sure to check out all of our coverage on that. And in the meantime, we're running a lot of budget stories on Science Insider. President Obama announced his budget request for 2013 this week, and we've got a lot of stories about the impact his request could have on agencies like the National Institutes of Health, the impact it could have on AIDS research, and even the impact it could have on the development of the next generation of supercomputers. So be sure to check out all of this stuff on the site.
Thank you so much, David.
Thanks, Sarah.
David Grimm is the online news editor for Science. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time